Welcome, welcome, welcome to everybody's favorite podcast. It's certainly my favorite podcast. Looking California and feeling Minnesota. It's a cinema podcast. We talk about movies and Hollywood. That's about it. We try not to venture into anything else. We stick to what we sort of know. My name is Michael McCaffrey. I'm the California version of this podcast. I'm an acting coach and a writer out here in sunny Southern California. And my co-host is...
Barry Anderson. I'm a director, sometimes cinematographer, and clearly I've lost my mind because I live in Minnesota, where it is unbelievably cold for most of the year.
Well, it is pretty cold here right now. I think it's in the mid-60s, so I have a sweatshirt on.
There was a hang-up button. I would be pushing it right. This might be a theme of the podcast.
It might be. And we are here today to talk about the film Marriage Story by Noah Baumbach, which is currently streaming on Netflix. And we both watched it. We both have feelings about it and thoughts about it. And we are going to share those thoughts and feelings. And you can bear witness to those thoughts and feelings. And maybe have your own thoughts and feelings, but you know, we're not going to have you call in. So tough break. We don't have that technology right now. Marriage Story. So Marriage Story is written and directed by Noah Baumbach. It is it stars Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson as a married couple going through a divorce. And the film has gotten a lot of acclaim. People generally like it. Critics adore it. And let's get started. So Barry Anderson from Minnesota, Noah Baumbach, is sort of a critical darling. He's sort of an art house infatuation. What is your history with Noah? Have you seen his films? What do you think of his films, if you have?
If I know anything about him, I'm pretty sure I've not seen any of his movies. Okay. I'm currently looking it up right now to see if there's maybe one of those ones that I didn't know was his. But right. I do not seek out his films. I do not get excited when I hear he's done one. Just because none of the ones he's done previously have got me so excited, I just had to run out and see him. So not that I have a undying hatred for him, having not seen him, I just haven't been interested in his particular brand of storytelling. Oh, yeah. He wrote Madagascar. So I did in fact see Madagascar, but I wouldn't consider that his, necessarily. His.
Right. Yeah, I've not seen Madagascar, which may come as a shock to you.
No, it does not shock me. Those of you that know you, no.
Yeah. So I have seen a bunch of Baumbach films. I saw his first one, Kicking and Screaming. I wasn't a huge fan of it. In 2005, he made The Squid and the Whale, which I saw, which I really liked, actually. And it's also a divorce film. And I liked it. It was very sort of acerbic there's sort of tonally it's very dark, sort of, you know, nobody gets killed or anything, but like it's just there's a dark energy to it, which I appreciated. And it's set in the neighborhood of Brooklyn in which I lived, which I appreciated. So I liked that. I did not like Margot at the Wedding. I did not like Greenberg. I really did not like Frances Ha. While We're Young, which stars Ben Stiller and Adam Driver, I didn't think I'd like, but I liked. So that's an accomplishment. It's pretty good. I've not seen the Meyerowitz stories yet, which, you know, who knows if that's any good. But and that brings us to Marriage Story. So I have a bit of a history with Baumbach. He's definitely sort of... he's an art house guy, but he doesn't fit too neatly there because he's sort of a mainstream. Thematically, he's sort of mainstream, and how he writes is sort of mainstream, and yet he presents himself as a sort of art house guy, which I've always found that to be conflicting and part of why I don't enjoy most of his films.
Let me ask you this. Is this a fair assessment from a man who's only seen one of his films, but I've seen previews, I'm aware of him. I feel like he does not have a distinct look or feel, which I think generally speaking, when you're going to be the art house darling, there kind of needs, that needs to go hand in hand. If you want to tell quirky stories, you have to have a quirky look, and he doesn't have that. So it's kind of like he's in between the mainstream and art house. And so I feel like he doesn't really have an easy peg, you know, to put where he belongs.
I agree. I think, and this is not a precise analogy. He's sort of similar to Woody Allen in the sense that he makes it, because you're right, he does not have a distinct visual style or an even interesting visual style. I would say he doesn't even really have a visual style. But his style is more about his writing and the sort of topics he chooses in it, which is why I think critics like him so much, is because he does take sort of offbeat, metropolitan sort of characters, and focus on them, you know, which is sort of like Woody Allen films, which I'm not a Woody Allen fan by any stretch. You know, they're basically about this nebbishy intellectual New Yorker, and I'm a New Yorker, but that's not the New York I'm from. You know, I'm from Brooklyn and an Irish Catholic working class background, and so I always found that to be sort of alien to me, and couldn't relate to it at all. And I feel the same way, oddly enough, about Baumbach, even though he comes from, I think he's from Brooklyn, and he writes about the art world. He writes about people working in theater and in film and things like that, which is, you know, in my adult life, this is what I've been doing. But I just never recognize the people he's writing about. So there's just always that disconnect. And the one time I did recognize it was in While We're Young, which Ben Stiller's character is this sort of, you know, approaching middle age documentary filmmaker. And he meets this young couple who are young artists, and he gets all sort of energized by them. And I could appreciate that because I knew a lot of people who were at that stage in life. And, you know, you're sort of, you used to be cool, and then all of a sudden you're looking back like, when did I stop being cool? What? How did that happen? That's one time that I've seen that. But the rest of it, it just seems to disconnect. And so I think his storytelling, I think his real identification is about his writing. And so, like, cinematically, I don't think there's any sort of distinct flair he brings to a film. And we can talk about cinematography in this film, which I think is fairly interesting for different reasons, but we can get to that in a little bit. So let's start with Marriage Story. You watched it. It's on Netflix. What did you think?
It's a complex answer for me. I would say if I had to give it a pass-fail grade, I'd have to reluctantly give it a fail grade. I'm going to touch on something you mentioned before that I think is actually very interesting in the current landscape of content consumption that we live in. And you said that, you know, you have feelings about Woody Allen. You know, he's from the same place you are, but it's not who you know. And I feel like more and more these days, all stories that resonate seem to have to be, if you don't see yourself in them, it's not for me. And it used to be the language of storytelling used to be universal. So like you'd meet someone that, you know, wasn't from your hometown, wasn't about you. That wasn't the person next door, but yet you understood their thought process. You understood kind of the grand themes that they were struggling with or the battles they were fighting. And I feel like more and more, if you immediately don't associate, oh, I know that, then you kind of, it's like a pass fail. And so in my history, I am a product of the divorce system. And one side, it was a very painful movie to watch because you're like, wow, other people have to go through that god awful, unbelievable mess of what it is. And so you don't really want to relive. It's like someone who was like, you know, being mauled alive by a bear and like, let's go back and remember what that pain was like. No, if you survive it, let's just push it off to the side. However, there was like three sides to the movie that I was kind of, you know, experiencing as I went through it. I tried to disassociate myself as much as one can. You know, I don't want to make it about me. But the first part, it kind of jumps into the story where they're kind of breaking up, but there's really no pattern of behavior of what they were like or why they're at this point. So kind of as things start to happen to them, you're trying to figure out, like, were they good together? Were they mean to each other? Was someone at fault? But it's kind of like the story's screaming ahead of where you are, which could, if done well, that could be interesting. And then they kind of slowly, you know, release tidbits of information. And what I've also found living through the divorce is usually there's like a split where people, there's rarely people that are stay friends with both sides and come at it with like a neutral point. And, you know, everybody blames both sides. Usually at some point there's a break and this person's right, that person's right. And it's, you know, all out war. And so in this particular movie, you know, it was kind of like they wanted to toe this line. And I struggled with it because it starts with you're not really sure. Then I thought the best part of the movie was kind of maybe the first third to the middle when you really got into how unbelievably effed up the entire legal system is. You had some of these brilliant scenes with them standing in there and just listening to the lawyers and listening to, like, you know, no matter what you do, you're screwed. And they're just going to steal all of your money and your ex's money and your children's money. And you're like, wow, this is like a, it's like a documentary on how bad this is. Right. But the movie wasn't about that. So then it abandons that. So then you go back to, okay, it's about these people. And I hate the fact it's called a marriage story because it really has nothing to do with the marriage. You're looking at the smallest point of a pivot from them being married to unmarried. And so it's like, it should, the marriage story, I know nothing about it. The movie that I think is it more interesting, even though it's not a perfect movie. Did you ever see the movie The Story of Us with Bruce Willis and Michelle Pfeiffer?
I think I did a long time ago.
That movie, even though it's got a slightly more happy ending because it doesn't necessarily end that it's for sure done, but you really get to go through both sides of both people's stories, what was good, what was bad, but you still have some inherent connections and there was like a value to that relationship. And so I thought that one felt like a more nuanced, you know, performance. This one kind of came across like for a while, you really, you know, you feel this way, you know, you're like, well, maybe he's in trouble with that, or maybe he's being a victim. Then you're like, well, then he did stuff to her. And so you're flip-flopping back and forth. But I feel like in the movie, I didn't want to flip forth. I wouldn't want to cheer for someone. I wanted to experience. And I didn't think the way it was told, I was able to experience. So by the end, I mean, it got so nasty and it was so contentious. And then like the next scene, they're being nice to each other and there's a connection. And I'm like, maybe for some people that's how it works. But I think in general, there's either the mystical amicable divorce where people are adults and they don't, you know, decide to go to the bottom base of the world. But I think most times when it gets to that base and you spend all of your money fighting and you know, uncover every dirty thing and you tell lies to smear the other person. Once you've gone to that, you don't soften and then remember the good sides of them. So I thought the latter part of the movie, especially the ending, was utter and complete horse crap. And I was like, this is like, it was like a fantasy in his mind. He's like, I would like my post-divorce to look like this. And none of it stayed in character. None of it in that story, like, connected. So there were like individual parts I thought were actually fairly well done, but for different movies. And I thought they'd put them into a movie that was very like, okay, now they've just completely changed the rules and the laws of gravity. And here we are now in this. So
yeah,
that's my, you know, very poor way of describing what I thought about the movie.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you talk about that. One problem I had with the movie was the transitions. Like, it really, I found them quite jarring, actually.
They were.
Because there were time jumps that were astronomical in a lot of ways. It's not huge amounts of time, but in terms of the relationship and what's happening in the drama, they were really large leaps. And I found them very jarring and discombobulating in terms of connecting with the story. Because oddly enough, what the film markets itself as a domestic drama, you know, and that's very interesting to me. And so it's sort of a character study of a marriage, which is why I understand why it's called A Marriage Story, because it's a character study of that split. So the character is...
That it should be called A Divorce Story. Because there's nothing. You have no... It's two people that have changed their opinion of what their lives were like. So you get to... There's no empirical evidence of what their marriage was like. So right. At the point we see it. So it's like, there is no truth in this movie. So like, I have a hard time, you know, it would be like, put yourself in the mind of a divorce attorney. Two people walk in. How the heck are you ever going to believe either one of them? Like, none of them has an accurate view of what happened in their marriage.
Right. Well, yeah, it's obviously it's all subjective by each person, and finding the objective truth in the middle of that is difficult. But what I mean by understanding why it's called A Marriage Story is that it's a character study of a relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what bothered me about the transitions and the sort of time jumps and the amount of time covered is that I felt it should have been more compacted. Whenever the film got any sort of momentum, it would make a jump and it would go away from that. And I felt that diluted any sort of dramatic momentum it ever garnered. And the other thing about it that was frustrating to me was, we'll get to that in a second, but it's interesting that you mentioned in terms of perspective, the film's getting a little bit of heat from female critics and things that it focuses too much on Adam Driver's character and not on Scarlett Johansson's. And I think that's actually a valid criticism, because perspective is always difficult in a film, but in a film like this, they really don't give you both sides.
No.
So it ends up, as I wrote about this, it feels sort of, because it's obviously autobiographical, it feels sort of narcissistic. And, you know, in the film, I wish I had written down how many times Adam Driver's character is called a genius. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Imagine making a movie about yourself and you're constantly being referred to as a genius and you're winning the MacArthur grant and all these things. And I was like, that's very odd. But my opinions of the film were, I am not a child of divorce. I've never been divorced, yet. But I didn't like the movie at all. And I didn't like it. I could certainly appreciate it. It's about something that I've not gone through, but I could still appreciate it, obviously. But I just thought it was really poorly done. I thought, in terms of direction, as we talked about, the transitions were very jarring and bumpy. I can't tell you, and this film has gotten a lot of acclaim, and I'm sure it's going to get Oscar nominations for the acting. I thought the acting was absolutely abysmal in this movie. I thought it was horrendous. And at one time, I'm watching it with my wife, and there's a scene where Scarlett Johansson is in her lawyer's office, and it's her first meeting with her lawyer, and it's a very long one-shot scene, which is, you know, I understood.
She was in the bathroom?
Yes. And I understood what they were trying to do.
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
No.
And it doesn't work because it is so, the acting and the staging is so theatrical. And I felt like I was watching, and I've been in many of these. I could go to any acting class in Los Angeles or New York any night of the week and see the same scenes done just as well, and feel just as phony, right? And that scene with Scarlett Johansson, I turned to Liz, my wife, and said, is the acting in this movie as bad as I think it is? And she's like, yes it is. And I was like, thank you. Am I going crazy? It rang so false to me. And the only performance I really enjoyed that felt genuine was Alan Alda's performance. And I think a function of that is that he is advanced in age. He has Parkinson's. And so I think he is reserved and he's not capable of being so quite theatrical. And so he comes across as an actual human being that you'd meet in life, as opposed to people performing everywhere. And There's another scene. It's sort of the big scene. It's a confrontation between Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson in his apartment in Los Angeles. And Everything comes out. It's like the big Oscar scene. And at one point, he is on his knees, sort of weeping, and she comes over and is touching him. And he hugs her, sort of at her waist. And it's a wide shot. And so you see that. And it's a very, it's like watching a play. And I remember being in an acting class years ago. And an acting teacher, this is at the Atlantic Theater Company, an acting teacher, somebody had done a scene where that had happened. And the acting teacher said, okay, listen, in real life, no one ever does that. And I thought, mental note, got it. And then I saw it in this movie and I'm like, huh, in real life, nobody ever does that. Now, to be fair, the characters in the film are all in the theater world. He's a director, she's an actress, and all these things. But that doesn't, and even all the people in his acting troupe, in his theater company, they all seem so big and so sitcom-y and so fake.
If you were a good director, wouldn't it be really fascinating if you played on the fact that everyone's a little bit larger than life, and maybe the fact that you would say that their marriage was a little bit of an act? Like, you know, he thought it was one thing, she thought it was another. So these raw moments where it's unraveling, if something in their behavior, in their speech, in the blocking somehow felt messier and like, oh my God, this is really what it was like. Wouldn't that have been some nuance that you would have been like, oh my gosh, these moments right here are what's real. This is the only time we get to see not someone's memory, not someone's, you know, kind of, yeah. You know, this is that mess that people apparently want to see in movies. And instead they just literally gave us the most, the stuff that he said to her would not lead her to come over and put her hand on him. It wouldn't lead to this touching moment. Like maybe if there's love there, maybe at a different scene, you could have that, but not right after that. You tear someone down like that and if they are, then there's no reason to get a divorce. Like the connection's way too strong. And then you're like,
yeah. And I agree. And I think it's a missed opportunity to have that scene. You know, it's like we talked about Star Wars last week when, spoiler alert, Chewbacca dies, and then literally the next scene, they're like, "No, we were kidding." You don't allow the audience to sit in that discomfort, and that's what they're there for, is to feel that, of like, "Oh no, we've lost Chewbacca. Oh my God." Same thing with this scene. They clash. Some horrible things are said to each other. But then everything's fine at the end of the scene, as opposed to let them sit with it. And then how great would the next scene be where they have to see each other for the children's handoff and they have to figure out, am I going to apologize to her? Is she going to apologize to him? How do we deal with this? Are we going to be dicks just to be dicks? And but our kids involved, you know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. And we can get into how the film is shot in a little bit, but I just felt,
Let me state this about the acting. I think we touched on it last week, but I don't know if I've ever stressed you enough. And if you talk to anybody on any of my sets, it has come up that the person that makes me the angriest when thought about in a film setting, it's Adam Driver. I have an irrational hatred of him as an actor that I don't really know where it comes from. Because, like, you know, is he the most offensive actor ever to walk or grace the silver screen? No. But does he make me feel like he's the worst ever? Absolutely. So every time he's in one of these grandiose movies that has this, like, powerhouse role, and as soon as he opens his mouth, I'm like, and that's the end of that performance. The sad part is I think he was the best of the main cast. I thought Scarlett Johansson was an absolute train wreck. Mostly. Yeah. I don't know how much of an acting talent she is, but her character was so irrational from scene to scene and where she was going. I don't know how much I credit or discredit her, but Adam Driver was a hot mess. But like, again, because it was a narcissistic role that was written by the director about himself, but then he makes himself an unlikable person that does horrible things. If I'm going to write myself, I'm going to make sure I'm a freaking saint. if I'm going to put flaws, I'm going to put flaws that are explainable, that are like, you know, well, you know, not refutable and whatnot, but I just thought that everybody in the movie, there, none of it was real. And I know that you brought out, and I think the performance, you're right, in Alan Alda's character. However, him switching to becoming a family law and him going through multiple divorces, I think everything that that man said was absolute BS. Because that was a speech that came from someone that knows nothing about how it works.
Right.
And I think if he would have, I think because in the story he got pushed out of one job and he fell into family law, I think it would have been fascinating had he never been divorced. And this is like a thing that he went into out of this grand notion, I'm going to help people. And his offering realistic help destroys Adam Driver's chance of getting his kid. That would have been phenomenal. But as soon as he said, I've been divorced multiple times and been through this, I'm like, everything that you're saying is utter horse crap. And I think that was a fatal flaw in the script, in my opinion.
To get back to Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver and such.
I thought we were done with them. That's not worth talking about. Nobody wants to hear about them.
So I would consider myself a fan of Scarlett Johansson. I've always enjoyed her. You know, I think she has a pleasing presence. She has a, you know, she's obviously a beautiful woman. And I think she used to be a decent actress, but I think she is so off in this movie. And she's, I don't know if you've seen Jojo Rabbit, but she's also in Jojo Rabbit. And I felt the same way about that. It feels so forced and manufactured and just out of rhythm or something. And it's not a good performance.
No.
Now, part of why Adam Driver comes across better in this is that, as people have pointed out, it's more from his perspective than hers. And what that really means is that, like, his actions seem more rational.
Yeah.
And so she comes across as irrational because we're not seeing her perspective. And he comes across as, oh, I'm the rational guy, you know, I'm being harmed. Now, as we talked about last time, it's funny we're doing a second Adam Driver movie. Adam Driver is one of the great mysteries of life to me. I don't understand his appeal. I know women who find him extremely attractive. I think he looks like the biggest dope on the planet. And as in terms of acting, I agree. He opens his mouth and I'm just like, what are we doing here? There's just nothing going on there. And, you know, in the film, he does all the things you're supposed to do. You know, he punches the wall and he, you know, does this and that. But it rings so hollow to me. You know, and I think about, like, who else could have been in the movie, or, you know, who else could you cast in these roles? Yeah, I think, like, you could have cast anybody in these roles.
But
here's the problem.
Yep.
In terms of, we'll get to here's the problem. But the rest of the cast does not fare very well either. Laura Dern's going to win an Oscar for her role, and I think she's terrible.
Are you kidding me?
She's going to win. Yeah, she's going to win. And I don't get it.
I don't get
that. And I like Laura Dern. I have nothing against Laura Dern. But I thought that performance was so transparently large and manufactured and phony and just yikes. And what's her name? Julie Haggerty as ScarJo's mom. I wanted to light myself on fire anytime she was on screen. I was like, good Lord. And there's a part in the movie where Adam Driver enters Scarlett Johansson's house and everybody's supposed to be there and no one, he's like, hello, and nobody answers. And I said out loud, I'm like, God, I hope there was a gas leak that killed them all. Because I hated everyone in this movie. Every character I found so unlikable and so fake and so full of it. So that was my take on the cast. And what really upsets me about it is that it's a perfect opportunity for actors to really crush it. But I think it's directed to be too big. I think the performances are too big. You know, I think about an obvious parallel to this is Kramer versus Kramer, which is Meryl Streep and Dustin Hoffman. And you look back at that movie now, which, you know, it's not a great movie, But those are two great performances.
Yeah.
Hoffman in particular, because he has much more screen time. But Meryl Streep, even with what she does, is so contained and it's so grounded, and she's very, very, she's wound very sort of tight. And, but the wound she has is palpable, but she covers it up. And with Dustin Hoffman, it's from the male perspective. It's a wonderful performance, and you see him trying to control the uncontrollable. You know, it's like he's trying to hold back a tidal wave, and it's great. Then you get to this movie, and it's the exact opposite of all that. It's really flamboyant theatrical acting that is so out of place in what the film markets itself as. Now, what it markets itself as, again, is a domestic drama. What it really is more a comedy. And if you go into it thinking like, oh, this is a comedy, maybe you'll appreciate it more than I would.
I mean, I was laughing out loud at parts when, like, Adam Driver, I think it was when he was talking to Alan Alda, and he was so frustrated because Alan Alda's like, you know, well, there, you know, the court's going to view it this way. And he's like, but you told me to do that. He's like, I know, but then it looks this way. And he's like, it was like this like comical of errors where no matter what he did, it just made everything worse. And I was laughing because I'm like, that's exactly what it's like. But it was so subtle that like Adam Driver is angry. Alan Alda's just like, yeah, but he's just playing it cool. And so it allows the reaction is allowed out in the audience as opposed to internal. But all the yelling and the stuff like that by most of the actors, it kind of kept everybody else out of the story. And I did not care for almost any of the performances, yeah. even their son, because in my particular case, the people that I know have gotten a divorce and they have different age kids, I felt like the child was too young to make some of the choices they were trying to force. That's more happens when you have an older child that's not processing, but the younger child is not that quick to just like oust one of their parents. Like there's much more of a connection. So like I know that they couldn't quite do all that, but there were just choices that again, so then like the kid just looks like a terrible like child and you're like, oh, I hate this kid. And if you're like saying I hate like a 6 or 8 year old kid, yeah, that's a bad sign.
That's not a positive sign.
What you should be doing is you should be identifying with the child going like, wow, like I feel bad because both your parents are going through this. You're stuck in the middle. I want to give you like, there should be, as opposed to like, wow, you are just so self-centered and you just don't care about anything, which is probably what a child does, but you wouldn't portray it that way.
Yeah. I thought the kid was, he's not a likable kid. no offense to him. I just wanted everybody to go away, but like, yeah, those comedy moments with Alan Alda and Driver are funny when he's like, you know, the court's going to see it this way. And he's like, you said we're not going to go to court. And he's like, yeah, we won't. But if we do, you know, and those are funny. But like, again, the film is selling itself as a drama. And
because comedies can't win awards. I mean, this is clearly
right,
awards.
Yeah.
This is one of those ones that people sit down, the pitch to the actors, the pitch to everyone's like, this is going to be an awards movie.
Agreed. You
know, that it's 100% an engineered movie as opposed to an organic, we made something and it caught fire. This is a orchestration.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so not a fan of the cast or the acting. The script, I thought, as we talked about, which is, you know, the basis for all of this, I'm wondering how the script read to people. If they were like, oh, like you say, like, oh, this is award bait, you know, like, here we go. Let's do this.
My assumption is off of Noah's name. And it's like, he probably, you know, Adam Driver's like, whatever you got next, I'm in. And my guess is that a lot of it came together kind of sans the script. It was just kind of like, we have trust and we all went into it. And yeah. Now the fact that it's getting such critical raves will feed into the next one like this.
Right.
But I think it was more that than him having to go out and like, I need to convince so-and-so to be in it. I don't think it was as much that as it was like, you know, this is the new Tarantino, you know, this is the new hot thing. Let's get you on this.
Right, right. Yeah, so the script felt, as I talked about with the transitions and things like that, I felt everything, if you're going to do like a theatrical version of that, that's fine. But to compress it and, you know, to have consequences to actions, like with the fight scene, and to have those play out, you know what I mean? So Baumbach is, you know, he may very well win an Oscar for the script, but, and I get why he would, but this is not anything that would move anybody if it weren't from him. You know what I mean?
This is a movie that will be forgotten. And a spoiler alert, if you want it, I'll talk about something very particular, but kind of before the last hurrah in the movie, they have the child person coming to watch them with their kids.
Yeah.
And just this most peculiar scene where he tells the woman, I pretend to slice open like a wrist, and then he actually cuts himself, and then it's like this weird horror movie where he's like bleeding all over her and getting like, I mean, it was like so out of left field, and it was horrible, and like, why would he say it? So I'm like, is he gonna lose his son now? Like, I figure like something bad, like the guy is melted down, all of this weight of this whole experience is just kind of turned him into like crazy, and then it fades to black and it comes up and everything's resolved and kids, you know, we'll split 50-50 and we won't
right.
lose one's money. Yeah. And I'm like, that's literally the next scene. And I'm like,
yeah.
So that scene just meant nothing.
Yeah.
And like there was no consequence for his behavior. It didn't mean anything. It was just an awkward scene. And then I know that you talked about this in your blog article, but I thought it was bad when the girls started singing.
Oh dear.
But when Adam Driver stood up and for like 4 minutes and had like choruses he went back to in that bar, I almost, like, I'm like, would it be bad if I shut off the last 6 minutes of the movie? Because this is so painful, so bad, so poorly sung. It didn't mean anything. And I'm just like, God, this is, what editor left this in? If I was a studio head, I said, cut that whole thing out right there. There's no way that makes the movie.
It is so painfully pretentious. I think it's a Sondheim song. I could be wrong. And I think the one Minnie Driver, Scarlett Johansson sings is a Sondheim song too. I thought that both songs were awful. Yeah, like no, they were just so, you know, like again, pretentious. But the Adam Driver one is so funny because in the days after seeing the movie, I would walk around the house just to irritate my wife and start being a lie. It's just like, what is this crap?
I remember hearing somewhere, someone said it, that the only people, I don't know if it's bold enough or whatever, but the only politicians that sing are basically like despots or like, you know, you watch these things and like, can you imagine like what kind of kahunas do you have to be to say it? And that was the equivalent in movie form. Yeah. They're like, the director and actor are like, let me get up and sing to my friends and make them sit through this. And you're like, you are the biggest narcissist known to mankind. And like, what would have made that great if he would have been singing and one of his friends threw a fucking beer can in his face? That would have been awesome. And they'd be like, get over yourself. Because that's what would happen in real life. I mean, it was just crazy.
Yeah, those were the two most painful moments in a very painful movie for me. I just couldn't get over how awful that was. And then to sit down and then go back up. And it's so obvious what they're doing, you know, like what they're trying to do with these things. And it's supposed to be this poignant thing. But it just comes off again as it's not poignant, it's pretentious. And yikes, man. Yeesh. So we've gone through most of the movie. Let's just talk real quick about your forte, the cinematography. The cinematographer is Robbie Ryan, whose most notable work was The Favorite. And I thought his work on The Favorite was pretty exquisite. He sort of Kubrickian with his use of candles and all that sort of stuff. Just my brief thoughts, and then you can take into the deep end. I found the cinematography I didn't think it was bad at all, but I felt the style of it was at odds with the style of the acting. So it was shot in a very realism sort of way. So it looks like a real world that we could inhabit and see and all these things. And yet the acting was so big, there was a real disconnect between the two. So if he had shot it to look more like, as odd as this sounds, a movie, maybe that acting would have been more palatable. But because it's not a gritty shoot by any stretch, but it looks like a real world. And yet the people are so unreal in it. I found that dichotomy to be very, very, very unpleasant. Your thoughts on the film cinematography?
The one word I would use is unremarkable. There wasn't a single scene. There wasn't a set piece. There wasn't a camera movement. There was nothing that I thought added to. Nothing necessarily like took away from.
Yeah.
I was like, if you're going to go get an award nominee, like major player, and that's what you squeeze out of it, I feel like you missed. I mean, I know that he switched his apartment a couple times, and I remember in the movie when he's like, oh, it's a new place. I'm like, is it? I'm like, it feels and looks exactly the same as the last place. How am I supposed to know that it's different? You know, he decorates it. Well, I thought he was decorating his old house. I didn't realize he moved into a new house. So there was stuff like that visually you need to do as a director and cinematographer to help the audience. You shouldn't have to insert lines like, check out my new wife. And people are like, oh, what? That's a new woman? I had no idea. That's a bad thing. That's usually bad in a visual medium.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's not like it's poorly shot or anything, but it is unremarkable. Okay. So bottom line, you liked it more than I did. I don't think either one of us liked it.
I thought there were parts that had, that I think it's good for people to see. Like if the whole idea is like a case study of what life is like for people, there are elements that had truth that worked. The problem was that it didn't amount to anything that people would remember or actually have an emotional reaction to. So it's like, there are certain movies that are just the whole thing, flush it down the toilet. I wouldn't say this is the movie, but if you, let's say there's 10 pieces, you can flush eight or nine of them down the toilet. So, I mean, it wasn't a huge win.
I would flush the whole thing.
I would just think that someone should make a better movie on the subject.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a
and very... don't cast Adam Driver.
Yes, please. Yeah, I think it's ripe. It's a wonderful topic, but it's just poorly executed. I thought it was tonally all over the map, and it would be interesting to see a divorce story about like regular people who don't have a TV show or have a MacArthur grant.
Well, that was the other thing, is they tried to paint that they weren't this super well-to-do couple in New York, but like her mom had a little bit of money, but like then they both hired the most expensive divorce attorneys in LA, and he maintains two homes on either coast and is flying back and forth, and like there was no consequences to their financials at all. Like nothing. Like they had, costumes they wanted, going out to eat what they wanted, whatever. Yeah. And you're just like, okay, so then in most people's real world, this is like when I went through my divorce, what I was told is just basically erase 5 years of your life. Just flush it down the toilet. Cause that's basically between your emotions and your financial and just the upheaval of your life before you feel settled again. It's 5 years. And they like had a minor disruption of like what, a couple months?
Right.
That apparently wasn't even that big of an ordeal. So you're just like, I don't buy it.
Yeah. And it's interesting that, he gets angry about the money and having to pay lawyers and all this sort of stuff. And yet we never see him suffer.
Not
having that money. Like he has to take care of his kid. What if like they have to eat shitty food?
Yeah.
Like it's all we can afford. Right.
Or what happens if he actually had to miss a meal? Like he gives the last thing to his kid and he's sitting there hungry. And you're like, that sucks. But no.
Or he can't afford to fly out to Los Angeles for a couple months.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. Stuff like that.
And then they said things like, my play closed, and that didn't affect you financially on top of it? Like, there was no stakes in the movie. It was to get to the end to show you how it all still means something. And I'm like, I don't don't buy this premise.
That's interesting. That's a fascinating topic you bring up, is that the film is totally oblivious to class issues.
Oh, yeah.
Just complete, like, and it would never occur to anybody in the movie that, like, oh, what are we going to do now? Like, I can't afford this lawyer. I can't afford to pay for her lawyer. I can't, you know, like, I have to choose between having a theater company in New York or seeing my son.
Yeah.
And that never happens. That choice is never made.
The choice is made after the divorce is done.
Right.
Moves to LA. And I'm just like, so all of the points of contention meant nothing, and you'd rather burn it all to the ground and then do it what you didn't want to do. Everything about it is like, you fought for what then? Like, I don't even understand what the purpose or anything it was happening. It drives me nuts. I think they meant it to mean that he had grown, and so now, like, he was going to this new part of life, and there was, like, this tragic moment. Like, that would have been great had he been, like, had in his own mind, he finally woke up. Like, if you would have painted it where, like, he never listened to her, and, like, there really were good opportunities, and there was a way to make this work. And then wouldn't it be great if she's standing there, like, you know, maybe it's the day of her next wedding, and he's like, I did it. And there's this sad tragic of, like, God, if you would have just gotten it a year before.
Right.
What, you know, our whole world, like, that would have made you sick. That would have, like, meant something. But in this, it was just, like, a throwaway, like, eh, whatever.
Yeah. Now he's, and like, then, again, spoiler alert, so fast forward if you don't want to hear this. Could there be a more trite ending than the shoe tying in the middle of the street? I mean, good Lord, man. Come on.
I mean,
what are we doing?
I was married almost 16 years, and I think the number of times my wife tied my shoes is a grand total of zero.
Yeah.
So
I
don't know what Liz does for you.
Yeah. Well, no, she dresses me every morning.
Okay.
So it's,
that explains a lot.
It's a quite different story. Yeah. So that's a Marriage Story. Sort of a mixed bag. I didn't like it. Barry liked 1/10 of it. And it's streaming on Netflix if you want to check it out.
God help you. 2 hours and 15 minutes of your life. Go for it.
Yeah, boy, and it felt longer than that. I don't know about you, but it felt like I was watching, like, a miniseries or something.
Clearly it's got to end, and then I'm like, oh, wait, he hasn't even switched lawyers yet. I'm like, this could probably be another hour. No, it was definitely one of those movies that whole theory of relativity of time, that proves that it's totally true.
Yes. All right, so any further thoughts before we sign off?
No, I don't think so. I think we'll one of these times we're going to hit on a movie that we like and can give good feedback on. But
I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun. All right. Thanks again for listening, watching on Look at California and Feel in Minnesota. I'm Michael McCaffrey. That's Barry Anderson. Thanks again. See you later.